Morning, church. Good morning to those of you at Park Collective. Welcome in Prescott Valley. We are glad you're there. Super thankful that we get to do this journey together. And can I be honest with you this morning? I almost called Todd Saturday morning and was like, Todd, I think you need to do the message this weekend. I think you need to man up and do it. I'm not feeling real great, and then I felt like God told me to man up. So here we are. So it is what it is. But one of the things I love, if you're new to this space, whether that's at Park Collective or that's here, one of the things I love is this is not performance. You're not showing up to watch something perform. We're showing up to go on a journey together. And if you're new to this and you're wondering what is church, you may see the lights and see all the things that wrap around it, but can I just encourage you that we're a bunch of people on a journey with Jesus and we're trying to figure out how to follow him. One of the things we have as a church is that we desire for every single person that ever shows up through these doors, that ever calls Heights part of their home, that what we would help you do, what we would help one another do is live the life we were created for in Jesus. That there is a life specifically in Jesus that is designed for you, built for you, and he longs for you to live. So much so that this past week there was a number of us pastors that went away. We were in Indiana and we got to go to a discipleship conference intentionally to talk about how it's such a large scale do we make sure that we're still in intentional discipleship relationships with one another. Why? Because the mission God gave us is that we would make disciples. And those disciples would make disciples. And those disciples would make disciples. And so the idea is that you're a disciple that should be making disciples that are making disciples. That's the mission we were given. The language we put for that is that we would live the life we were created for in Jesus. And so just with that, like just know that part of being a part of this family is that we press and move forward together. We push into things, which is why we do these collection of talks, right? The idea of around a collection of talk is that not only would it start here, but it's a conversation, right? It goes from here, hopefully, to a smaller circle of people where you get to interact and talk about what we talk about here, that you would take it a layer deeper, if you like, that you would find some accountability to put into practice the things that you've been given, that the Bible, Jesus talked about that all the time, that we would put into practice what we've been given. And I think, you know, within that smaller circle, that hopefully where it ends for you this week is it goes from here to a smaller circle to a one-on-one conversation where you're able to get under the surface and apply it to your life. And here's what I mean, right? Because this collection of talks specifically, obviously, is centered on the person of Jesus. And I would say today, with the story we get into, the story's kind of crazy. It has everything from spies and espionage to prostitutes and ropes and all kinds of stuff. It's a little crazy. But it creates for us, like we've been looking, such a beautiful picture of Jesus. But maybe starting, I would say this. What are you hoping for today? What are you hoping for? What is it in your life? And I don't mean like I hope for a Range Rover, right? I don't mean that. Like if that's where you're at, that's fine, right? Like that's the journey. But I would hope that there's something a lot deeper to the understanding and reality of being human, that you've got stuff in your life that you're going, that is way too big for me. I don't know how that turns out. I need Jesus to change it. What are you hoping for? What are you hoping Jesus meets you in today? What are you hoping for in your life today? Got it? Something come to mind? I'll just personalize it. For me, if you ask me, John, what are you hoping that God does? If you ask me, hopefully you catch me at any point without any context, you just say, what's your number one hope in your life? My number one hope in my life is that my wife will be healed, right? She's been sick for 7 years. It's been ongoing, can't get any answers. And my number one hope is that she will get healed, right? That's one I live with. That just goes around with me. Then there's other hopes from there. Like if you ask me about the church, there's hopes for the church. If you ask me about my kids, there's hopes for my kids. But if you were to say, John, what is your number one hope today? My number one hope in my life is I hope, I have an expectation, I have a confident expectation that my wife will be healed, right? That's what I long for. And the story we're in today, there's this idea of hopes and what you do with them and where you go with them. And in Joshua chapter 2, I'm going to give you an early warning. We are going to read a lot of scripture today. So if you're like, I prefer to read it on my phone, I don't encourage you to open your app or you can follow on screen, whatever works for you. But we are going to read a lot because I can't tell the story any better than it does. So we're just going to, we're going to read it. Joshua chapter 2 verse 1 says this, "And Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittim over to the land and said, especially Jericho." You got that? Especially Jericho. So he's sending spies, especially Jericho. "So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there." So you may be going, okay, hang on, John, who's Joshua? Like, we were talking about Moses last time we were together. Last time we were doing this collection of talks. Well, Moses has now died and God's ready to move the Israelites into the land he's promised them. And in chapter 1, he recognizes Joshua as a leader and he says, hey, Joshua, you are going to have to be strong and courageous. And so Joshua is now essentially the new Moses, so to speak. So Joshua now sends out two spies and it's intentional that he sends them to Jericho. And that becomes important when you understand kind of just what God is doing and how God cares about one, that he is sending them intentionally to Jericho. And that word spies is interesting because in the literal translation, it has this idea of tale tellers. Like they would go into a location. We think of spies as going in and getting all the information they can to create chaos or whatever, right? To be able to attack weakness and all of that. This actually carried the idea that they went in to tell tales. That they would go in and they would create disruption by tales they were telling. That they would come back and tell tales to their own people of what they'd seen. So they were kind of this idea of you were a tale teller. And then it specifically tells us that they end up at the house of a prostitute named Rahab. And in the context of that, like it, the way it's thought about is there's some dispute amongst commentaries and how and who she was and what her role was. Some think that she was kind of like a house manager, that it was an inn. And so she was kind of the manager of the inn. Some people believe that she was an active prostitute that was just a part of what was there and did her part for the spies. And some believe that the reason this is mentioned is because if you were sending spies, spies were going to tell information and get information, then a common space where people gathered and they would gather around meals and drinks and because they were staying there overnight, that what you would get is you get a lot of information. It would be a hub to gain information. And so that's where the spies end up. Verse 2, "The king of Jericho was told, look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sent this message to Rahab, bring out the men who came to you and entered your house because they have come to spy out the whole land. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. She said, yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they had come from. At dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, they left. I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You may catch up with them. Verse 6, but she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax she laid out on the roof. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of the Jordan. And as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut." Now, I don't know how nice, I don't know how you come into church. I don't know what you think you know about the Bible. I don't know what you think you know about God. You may have all of your theology all buttoned up in a nice little box. I'm going to help you out just to mess that up. You ready? She lies. She lies. And God knows it. And just keep that in mind. When we get to later how she's honored by God, just keep that in mind that she lies and God doesn't strike her dead. Okay, moving on. Verse 8. "Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up to the roof and said to them, I know that the Lord has given you this land and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on earth below. What a testimony. She goes, I heard of you guys. She goes, I've heard it. She goes, I heard about how you crossed the Red Sea. I heard about what God did when you wiped out those two kings. Her testimony is what? I have heard this. Isn't it amazing how powerful testimonies are, by the way? If you were here last week and you got to be a part of the celebrations and you got to hear the testimonies of individuals, that's the power of those moments, and why we have to celebrate them is because in those moments, what's happening is there should be a bolstering of your faith. That, wait a minute, if God can do that for them, he can do that for me. Wait a minute, if I'm going through a season where I'm walking away or I'm struggling in my relationship with God and I hear of somebody whose relationship is flourishing, all of a sudden it transforms me to go, hey, if they can make it through and they can be where they are with God, there's hope that I can too. That's what's happening here. And she's going, I've heard what God's done for you, and essentially I'm hoping that God will come through for me. I've heard what's happened there, which brings up a point. It's really important what you're listening to. It's really important what you're listening to. Here's what I mean. What we hear shapes us. When we were in Indiana, we were sitting there on the last night and we were sitting having a conversation, and all of a sudden in the middle of it, we got an alert. And the alert said, your flight's been delayed by an hour and a half. Well, guess what happened? We got to sleep in, right? Why did the actions change? Because the information we heard changed the actions that came out. We didn't get to the airport nearly as early as we would have. Why? Because we had information, we heard something, and it changed our actions. Hey, church, can I just pastor you for a moment? What you listen to really matters, especially in an election year. Can you please be really careful what you listen to and how much you listen to? I'm not stepping into political parties. This is purely sitting in the middle. You ready? If all you listen to is the news over and over and over, I can guarantee you, you will be filled with fear, not faith. If all you do is listen to this person say this about this person, that person say this about that person, all you will be filled with is bitterness and hatred towards one or another instead of being filled with faith. We need to be really careful that the things we're intaking, if I put it into a different context, my wife, if all we listen to is doctors, we are going to be disappointed. And I don't mean that doctors are bad, and I'm not saying don't go to doctors, but I can tell you we have been to doctor after doctor after doctor, test after test after test, and they don't know what's going on with her. And if all I listen to is doctors, guess what I end up with? Hopeless and fearful. But can I tell you that the healer of my wife is God and God alone? Right? The same as when it comes to the country, the person in control of this country is not you. The person in control of this country is not me. It is not a party. It is not a leader. It is God, and it always has been. And it is God that will raise up leaders and set them down. And we've got to be careful that we're in the book and going, what does God think? And what does God say? And what is God showing me? And because here's the thing, when you look back at God's faithfulness over the years and the generations that came and went, all of a sudden you go, I can put my faith in that because that's unchanging. But if you put your faith in what you hear on the news, you will be scared today. You will be wavering today. We have to get to a point where what we are intaking really, really matters. So let me ask you, when it comes to your hope, what are you listening to? What are you listening to? What is it that's driving the narrative and what you're hoping for? Which brings us back to our conversation, right? That in this moment, what does she say? There is no God but that God. She goes, I've heard what he's done. Which leads to verse 12, which says, now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family because I have shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father, mother, my brothers, sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death. Our lives for your lives, the men assured her. If you don't tell what we are doing, we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us the land. So she let them down by a rope. Remember the word rope. She let them down by a rope through the window. For the house she lived in was part of the city wall. Okay, super important. That her house was part of the city wall. It was built into the city wall. Now Jericho, they believe that the city of Jericho was more like a large fort in size, and it had two walls. It had an outer wall and an inner wall. Her house was built into the wall. Okay, so just keep that image in mind. She said to them, go to the hills so the pursuers will not find any of you. Hide yourselves there 3 days until they return and then go on your way. Anybody's brain firing, like, wait a minute, I see that, why 3 days, right? Like at this point, church, in the collection of talks we're doing, your brain should start connecting dots. Wait a minute, 3 days, that sounds a whole lot like how long Jesus was in a tomb, right? So now our brain should start to go, huh, I wonder what's happening there. And she goes, well, go hide yourselves 3 days until they return and then go on your way. So the spies at this point are dead men walking, right? They're dead men walking. If they get caught, they're gonna be killed. And what happens? They go and hide for 3 days like Jesus in a tomb, and they walk out to newness of life and free, right? It's a picture. All the way through scripture, this is the beauty of the Bible. All the way through scripture, God has embedded all these themes and moments that we should be able to go, oh, he's really just pointing to, he's really just, like, he could have picked 4 days, he could have picked 5 days, he could have picked 2 days, but he picked 3 days. And there's these themes that catch all the way through. Verse 17, now the men said to her, this oath you made us swear will not be binding on us unless we enter the land and you have tied this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. And unless you have brought your father, mother, your brother, and all your family into your house. Sounds an awful lot like, remember Easter, we talked about Passover. Where was the family supposed to go? Into the house. Hi, Miss Stephanie, how are you? I just saw you. Welcome home. They were in the house, right? And so the idea that they were in the Passover in the house, same thing applies here. God's building themes through the story. Verse 19, if any of them go outside your house into the street, their blood will be on their own heads. You will not be responsible. As for those who are in the house with you, their blood will be on our head if a hand is laid on them. But if you tell what we are doing, we will be released from the oath you made us swear. Agreed, she replied. Let it be as you say. So she sent them away and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. When they left, they went into the hills, stayed there 3 days until the pursuers had searched all along the road, and the men returned without finding them. Then the two men started back. They went down to the hills, forded the river, and came to Joshua, son of Nun, and told him everything that had happened to them. They said to Joshua, The Lord has surely given the whole land into our hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us. They went from tale-tellers to messengers. You see that? That they've been changed by what they'd heard. What did they heard? Oh, your God is God and our hearts melted in fear. They come back now to this moment and they're now messengers for, hey, we can do this. We got this. What they heard transformed them. But I want you to catch what happens with Rahab. Because what she's told, she's striking a deal, right? Like, hey, if I save your lives, you're gonna save my life. And she goes, give me a sure sign. And the sure sign that is given is take this piece of scarlet thread. Like at this point, church, if you've been in this collection of talks all the time, you're like, scarlet, that's weird. You could say that was red, right? Huh, that connects to a whole bunch of stuff later. But it also connects backwards to when we're talking about at Easter, when you take blood and put it on a door, right? And what happens in this moment then is she's given a scarlet thread to what? Hang outside of your window. Okay, let's step back so we connect all the dots to our conversation, right? So we started this talking about hope. We started this talking about what is your core hope today? Well, we get into the story and realize that for Rahab, she has a core hope. What is her core hope? That her family will be what? Rescued, that they will be saved. Like her desire of why she's doing what she's doing, and she's heard this about God, and so she's hiding these spies because she knows that they're going to come and they're going to destroy Jericho. And she knows that the only way is that she's got to be rescued. And so she asks for a sign, and the sign is a red cord that she's going to hang out of her window. And when they see that, she'll be saved. Then you jump to chapter 6. And by the time you get to chapter 6, God's given them the battle plan. I'm not a military guy at all, but it's not a good battle plan. I can tell you that from just reading it, right? What are you going to do? We're going to march around the city. Who's going to go in front of you? Well, we're going to have the musicians, and we're going to have the priests, and we're going to have the Ark of the Covenant. And all. It's like, wait a minute, where's the military men, right? Like, where's the strategy of defense? You could get destroyed from above, right? Like, and yet God goes, no, this is what I want you to do. Day one, walk around the city, take a rest. Day two, walk around the city, take a rest. Day three, walk around the city, take a rest. By the time you get to day seven, do it seven times. And when you get to the last one, take those trumpets, make a loud sound on those trumpets, and you yell, right? Like, you yell a shout to the God of celebration. I wonder if we took this literally, if we could bring these walls down today when we get to worship at the end. You guys just start shouting and God brings the walls down. But it's interesting, right? Because we would look at that and go, that doesn't make sense. But God's working a miracle. Think about it for a second, right? You got Rahab. She's a Gentile. She's an outsider. She's not an Israelite. God's told him, like, go in and destroy the city. It's fascinating that inside of this city, embedded in the wall, is a lady. And God cares so much about that lady and her family because of her faith, because of what she's heard, that they walk around the city, right? And the walls come down, but listen what happens. Joshua 6:22. Joshua said to the two men who had spied out the land, so the spies that went, Joshua's talking to them, go into the prostitute's house. How can you go into a house if it's not standing? That's the miracle, right? That inside of the wall that was coming down, that part didn't come down, and she, her house is still intact, so much so that it says, go into the house and bring her out, all who belong to her, in accordance with your oaths to her. So the young men who had done the spying went in and brought out Rahab, her father, her mother, her brothers, her sisters, and all who belonged to her. They brought out her entire family and put them into a place outside the camp of Israel. I mean, how amazing God's intentional love and care for someone, and I'm just going to put it bluntly, church, that the church would go, well, she's not living a lifestyle that makes it equitable for God to do something for her. I mean, this should give us hope. Because what you get in this is you get a story of someone where God goes, no, she and her faith, her belief in God allows her to take what God told her to do, which that's a whole nother conversation that we don't have time for. But how many of you are trying to get to God your way? Can I tell you, it doesn't work, right? We can strive and we can think we can come to God how we want to. God gave us a scarlet thread and his name is Jesus. Just like she takes the scarlet thread and puts it in the window, the only thing that can save her and her family is what? The scarlet thread in the window. That sounds an awful lot like the only thing that can save you, your family, and your soul is the person of Jesus Christ, whose blood ran red on a cross. I mean, it's pretty amazing when you get into the story and you start to go, wait a minute, her hope of rescue. And God goes, take the thread and put the thread out the window. It's amazing how she's remembered. Because in James chapter 2, James is writing a letter to the church. He says this in the same way in verse 25, in the same way was not even Rahab the prostitute, was not even, Rahab the prostitute, considered righteous for what she did when she gave lodging to the spies and sent them off in a different direction. As the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without deeds is dead. What is James getting at? He's taking Rahab, an outsider in the story, and honoring what? Her faith. That she heard what God had done, who God was. She believed it so much that the actions of her life said, I believe that he is God. And so I'll hide these spies. To which James goes, the way that you knew her faith was real was by the actions that went along with it. She's held up as a model for us. She's held up for a model for us. Then wait a minute, the spy said, hey, if you hang the, okay, by faith, I'm gonna hang this out there and I'm gonna trust that God's gonna use you to rescue me. What are you doing? What are you doing with what you've heard? What is your faith built on? When it comes to the actions, right? Because she could have easily, think about it for a second. She could have easily gone, those crazy Israelites. I don't want nothing to do with that. She could have easily gone, I don't like red. I like blue. I'm gonna hang a blue thread out my window. She could have. She could have had a whole collection of colors. But what was she told? Hang a scarlet thread. That hope that you have of rescue and salvation, hang a scarlet thread. And James honors her. She's not only honored by James, she's honored in Hebrews. If you know anything about Hebrews, Hebrews is an amazing book of the Bible. Again, written to the church, but written specifically through a Jewish lens, right? So written to people who believe Moses, like how is there anyone greater than Moses? And the writer basically shows you that Jesus is greater than Moses. How is anybody better than angels? Jesus is better than angels. It's like you could sum up the whole book of Hebrews with Jesus is better, right? And it gets all the way through and it gets to Hebrews chapter 11, which is commonly known sometimes as the Hall of Faith. So these are the people down through the years who by faith, they're just kind of, if you had, a hall of fame, so to speak, that's these guys. Listen to this. In verse 31, Hebrews 11, 31, by faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. Okay, by faith, by her act of faith, God puts her into, inserts her into the hall of fame of faith, if you like. And all she did was take him at his word. You know what's stunning? She is one of two people, two women that are named by name in Hebrews 11. One of two. You know who the other one is? Abraham's wife, Sarah. That's a pretty high class to be in. And what does God do? He honors her on the pages of what he goes, this is outstanding faith. And all she did was to take God by what I've heard and I'm gonna have action to follow it. Oh, my flight's delayed. I'm gonna sleep in and get there a little later. Oh, wait, if I want rescue, I need to what? Honor your people. I need to hang this thread out. Okay, I got it. It's beautiful. A simple act of faith that God honors. One more spot that she's honored or mentioned. Matthew chapter 1, verse 5. It's the genealogy of Jesus, right? What is the lineage of Jesus? How is Jesus connected to David? Verse 5, Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King David. One of two women mentioned in the genealogy of Jesus, one is Rahab, who was an outsider and a Gentile. Same with Ruth. You don't know, church, where your faith is going to go. What I mean by that, you don't know what God wants to build through you. You're just sitting going, I really hope this. And God's going, by faith, trust me. By faith, walk with me. By faith, do what I've told you to do. And we have no idea how it will ripple for generations to come because you chose in this moment and this time to stand by faith. I love how it's referred to her when it gets to when it gets to James, and James is talking about like even Rahab, you guys, like it's like, but can I tell you what's amazing? Is her past. Her past didn't determine her present or her future. She could have sat in that inn, whatever it was, and gone, well, I'm just a prostitute. I'm the worst of the worst. God could have nothing to do with me. She could have done that. And we would have all gone, huh, that's fair. But here's the thing, and somebody else said this, it's not mine, but if your past doesn't die, your future won't live. If your past doesn't, if you don't let your past die and you don't put it to death, it will rob you of your present and it will rob you of your future. You have to put it to death. That's what the cross is all about. And some of you are like, John, yeah, but we still didn't get to the Jesus part. Well, we kind of did. Because that scarlet thread is Jesus. What do I mean by that? Well, let's just start with the hope of, if you don't know Jesus, the hope of eternity, right? The hope that this life matters, the hope that there's life beyond this. Well, it's found in the person of Jesus. And what do you do with that? You just hang that scarlet thread out of the window of your life. You see, Jesus is the scarlet thread. All the way through scripture, what is being weaved all the way through Jesus? What is the thing that we have to hold on to in the midst of our hope? Jesus. And so I don't think it's by chance that when Jesus got his friends around the table, what color is in your cup? It's not a trick question. Hopefully you can figure that out. It's really not a trick question. I know sometimes preachers have rhetorical trick questions sometimes. It's not a trick question. Is it by chance that what you hold, that he used the color in the wine that would have represented blood? That the color red matters that much because it's all the way through that you would remember that in the midst of what you hope for today, that Jesus is the answer. That you may have been running into all kinds of things, trying to figure all kinds of things out. And what Jesus does is he brings you back to a table and he centers you, centers me, where? On him. As if to say, here is your scarlet thread. What are you going to do with it? So the next moments are yours to just sit with the Lord and just ask him, God, I'm hoping for this. How do I walk by faith today with the scarlet thread of Jesus, with the blood that sets us free, with the blood that makes all things right? And so the next moments are yours to sit with him, and then we'll take it together. What you hold in your hand represents the person of Jesus. That he declared it represented his body and his blood that was both given and shed for you. And so maybe in a way to just put fresh language this morning to it. that marriage that you are longing to be healed, this is your scarlet thread. And his name is Jesus. Those kids you're trying to raise and you don't know what to do and you have so many hopes and prayers and you're just longing for God to show up, this is your scarlet thread that you get to hang out the window of your parenting. Those of you that have got sin that you're like, I don't know if I'll ever defeat it. Well, I got news for you. You never will. You're not strong enough. That's why you take your scarlet thread and you allow the scarlet thread of Jesus to cover your sin. You allow the scarlet thread to hang out of the window in your battle with sin. My wife's healing, you guys. I hope that she wakes up tomorrow and she is completely healed. I don't care if that healing comes through doctors, but I do know this, that whether this life or the one to come, she will be healed because of this scarlet thread. And that's what I hold on to. It's out the window of my life. Those of you that have got relationships that are just broken and busted, and your hope is for healing, this is the scarlet thread of your relationships. And so Jesus took it and he said, this is my body. This is my body. And it is given for you. Take, eat, and do this in remembrance of me. He took the cup of wine and he talked about a new covenant, right? A new covenant where grace would rule. Where he had done everything and all we have to do is go, I'm listening to everything you've done and I will put it into action. That's it. So the cross covered it all. Forgiveness is in the cross. I'm going to believe it and I'm going to walk in forgiveness that's at the cross. Wait, there's grace and mercy and I don't have to, it's not my self-effort. Absolutely, it's at the cross. Well, I'm going to cling to that new covenant. And so my walk with Jesus, what he gave us in the new covenant is he goes, this is the scarlet thread of the new covenant. And he handed them a cup and he said, take, drink, do this in remembrance of me. God, this morning, we just say, thank you. Thank you, first of all, for the way that you love us. Thank you that we are just like Rahab. God, we are lost in our sin in the middle of a wall. And yet you pull a miracle to rescue us in the person of Jesus. We thank you for rescue today. We thank you for salvation today. We thank you that you have provided a way for us to have relationship with you today. God, thank you. Thank you that in the midst of our hopes, in the midst of the things of life that are hard, that we just long for life to show up in them. That God, you are more than enough today. The things we've heard about you, the testimonies that are saying, God, we've witnessed it over and over. And we just say, thank you. We stand on the truth of who you are. We stand strong with scarlet thread in hand. And God, I pray that as we stand together and we sing and by faith, we change the posture of our body and we declare with our mouth using the breath you have given that we will stand with arms wide and heart abandoned because of who you are. As a declaration, God, that we take the scarlet thread of Jesus and we hang it out of the windows of hope we have in our life. Thank you for loving us first. Thank you for rescuing. Everybody said, amen.